This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ted Genoways is the editor-in-chief at the Virginia Quarterly Review. You can read some fantastic work online at vqronline.org, and he joins us live in studio. And you are literally, when did you get off the plane? You just got back, right?
Yeah, we got back, I guess, Saturday night, Sunday morning, something like that. It still feels like half of me is still in Suriname.
And where, for the folks who just, you know, like Miss Teen South Carolina says, you know, most Americans don't have maps. Where exactly is Suriname?
Well, of course, it's right between Guyana and French Guiana.
Oh, of course, yes, of course.
I hope that clarifies things. It's on the north coast of South America, and it's right on the Atlantic Ocean, and it's...
Down near Aruba.
Yeah, I was going to say it's almost as much a part of the Caribbean as it is South America.
Yeah, down near those the ABC islands, Aruba, Bonaire, Curaçao.
Yeah, and Trinidad and Tobago are actually the easiest place to fly to in and out of the international airport.
That was
Paramaribo.
That was my next question: was how do you actually get there? How many stops do you have to make? You have to go through Miami, or can you?
Yeah, you have to go through Miami to Trinidad and to Port of Spain, and then from there on to Paramaribo.
Wow! So, and how long is the trip? Like 4 days by plane?
It seemed like
the way the airports are now.
It was about, I guess it was about 15, 16 hours, sort of depending on how things went, but long enough that you know you've been doing it.
Wow.
For sure.
And what's the time zone difference? Where are you?
You know, it's funny. I never figured out even what the time zone was called. You know, you know the time zones that we use, but we went east onto Atlantic time, and then we went east again onto whatever is beyond Atlantic time. So we were 2 hours ahead of East Coast time.
Oh, okay. Well, so, we want to. The new issue of the Virginia Quarterly Review is out and available now, and you can get sneak peeks at VQR online. We want to talk about that, but before we do, tell us what you went down to South America for. Your dad is a biologist, right?
He is. He is. He's a mammalogist. Studies small mammals. Specializes in rodents and in bats, and has especially made bats of the New World tropics a specialty of his. And I proposed this idea to Outside Magazine to do a story looking at some of the places that he had worked in Suriname 25 years ago, at a time when he was trying to convince the government there to set up a national park system and to conserve their rainforest. And the bats are an interesting part of the story because, as it turns out, most of the bat species are extremely sensitive to even small disturbances in the forests. And so the idea was to go back, net the bats, see what was there, see if the rare species were still represented, and look at what was going on the ground in the parks that he had a hand in helping them get set up.
So this was sort of like a 25 years later kind of comparison.
Yeah, and with a fair amount of that time in between being consumed in Suriname by political upheaval and a whole string of coups and as much political corruption as one could imagine in a country that only has 500,000 people in it. My dad's line at some point on the trip was it's as though it's an entire economy of bait and switch. And, you know, you spend the whole time arguing with people, haggling over, you know, what you agreed on, trying to get that to actually happen. And then all this sort of bureaucracy and these payoffs and everything is just a complete mess.
It's totally corrupted.
Absolutely.
The economy itself is completely corrupted.
Yeah, everything just seems completely run by corruption. And in the hands of this corrupt government is sort of the largest untouched portion of Amazonia that's left. And one would certainly hope that can be conserved in some way, and you know, unfortunately, the results are kind of mixed. In seeing the way that things are going there right now, I mean, there's certainly plenty of cause for optimism in the general country because that so much of it remains undeveloped, But in any of the places that are developing, and they're developing more and more, it's going on pretty rapidly and irresponsibly, and unchecked, basically, by the government.
My guest is Ted Genoese of the Virginia Quarterly Review. And so what was the situation with the bats?
Well, the bat, we were...
Were you literally out in the rainforest?
Oh, yeah, definitely so.
I mean, the bugs...
I've got the bug bites to prove it.
The snakes and the bugs and the... You were, like, what, camping out in the forest?
The places that we went... It's what my dad describes as hard shell camping. I mean, it's places where there's some sort of what we would think of as sort of a cabin or something like that that is usually in these spots that's been set up for researchers in these particular places that are of interest. But the accommodations are pretty basic, for sure. So we were out there always just sort of right at the edge of the forest, and then, you know, every afternoon as it was starting to get dark, going out, setting nets and waiting for it to get dark and hang out in the rainforest and see what flies into the nets.
Before we go to a break here at the bottom of the hour for our local news break, are the bats okay? I'm wondering what the situation looks like. Was your dad encouraged, or was he sort of bummed out by what he found?
I'd say it's a mixed bag. There are some places that that they seem to be doing really well, both the bats and what the environmental organizations are doing. There's also, I mean, Brownsburg, the one national park in Suriname, really there's very little to feel optimistic about. It's a whole series of ecological disasters in a place that's supposed to be this place that's set aside for conservation, and it's hard to feel optimistic about that.
They're just developing it, basically? Developing a national park?
The biggest problem right now is illegal gold mining inside the park. And in the last couple of years, there's about 12% of the park has actually been destroyed by gold miners.
Gosh.
So, as I say, it's hard to feel too optimistic about that.
We're talking with Ted Genoese of the Virginia Quarterly Review. We'll continue this conversation on the other side of this break for local news and weather. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You're listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, thanks to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you want to get involved with the show, feel free to comment on our blog at sevillepodcast.com.
Ted Genoese is the editor at the Virginia Quarterly Review, online at vqronline.org. And let me take a very quick moment to say you have a kick-ass website. I know that Waldo Jakewith now is the web editor at the Virginia Quarterly Review, so it's no mistake there that y'all have an awesome website. It really is great.
Yeah, well, we're really pleased with the work that Waldo's doing. He's making it better every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
No exaggeration.
Now, before we talk about the new issue of the Virginia Quarterly Review, I want to share with the listeners here. Last week in the Washington Post, staff writer Pete Carlson had this to say about the Virginia Quarterly Review. Over the last 5 years, Ted Genoese, VQR's editor, has taken a staid old literary magazine and transformed it, adding not only great journalism, but also color photos, comics, cartoons, eye-popping graphics, and anything that strikes his fancy. In those years, VQR has been nominated for 10 national magazine awards and has won 2, and it deserves them. It's a great magazine. Check it out. I certainly concur. That's a wonderful praise from the Post.
That's hard to beat, no question. And we were taken by surprise by that column and really delighted. It's a wonderful thing to have somebody take notice in that way, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I hope Virginia knows, and I was telling you this on the phone today, I hope Virginia knows, and I'm certain they do, that one day the call will come, whether it's from The New Yorker or Time. You are an incredibly talented editor, Ted. You really are. And we're just so lucky to have you here in Charlottesville.
I appreciate it, Coy. I like it quite a lot here in Charlottesville. I just hope they don't kick me out of here.
So the Virginia Quarterly Review, the winter issue is now available. Give us an idea of what's in the issue this time.
Sure. Anyone who sees it on the newsstand and is a fan of Chris Ware will no doubt... there you go. There's
As
a fan
I?
Right at the door. Well, no doubt recognize Chris's hand, not only in the design and in the usual live area of the cover, but he actually redesigned our usual masthead and those distinctive VQR blocks and so on. Chris also did It's a sort of practical joke that made its way onto the cover of the issue. He asked me what should be on the cover in terms of text, and I told him that, you know, that the contents of the issue were the usual, that it was war and the end of the world. and Chris put onto the cover that in this issue are war, the end of the world, and this serialized pictorial fiction by Chris Ware.
Yeah. Now, for the folks, how do you describe him? For the folks who don't know him, I truly believe I'm a huge fan of his, and I really believe the man is a genius. There's no other way to describe him.
I absolutely agree. I think he's one of those people who's overdue for a MacArthur grant. In fact, I think he's one of those people who deserves the label of genius. And to me, it's interesting. It's not so much his visual style that I think is amazing, which is what most people respond to. He has this incredibly clean, draftsman-like style that he applies to things and is absolutely meticulous in his detail. To me, the thing that's fascinating is his narrative strategy. That to me, he is every bit as inventive and interesting as any fiction writer in terms of just narrative strategy.
Yeah. I think he's doing with comics. And for folks who don't know, he is he has totally reinvented comics. He's a graphic novelist. The best-selling Jimmy Corrigan, The Smartest Kid on Earth, that's his. Right. Chris Ware is his name. I think he's doing with comics what Orson Welles did with film. He just saw this art form and just took it to a place that no one had ever taken it.
I think that's a really apt analogy. I mean, I think that what Chris has done is really, as I say, taken the novelist's tools, the fiction writer's tools, and applied all of these sorts of these free-ranging strategies to what had always been this very linear form. And everyone had always thought, well, you know, you have the sequence of blocks and everything has to move in that direction, and it's extremely linear and it's extremely kind of mundane and predictable. And what Chris has done is really freed it from that format. And I think of, you know, he's been serializing his own work in a series that he calls the Acme Novelty Library. And there's a storyline in one of those issues that is that two characters who are each on their way to school at the same time, and there's the two narratives run top and bottom of the page until they're actually in a car accident, each with the other, and the narratives flip places and continue on.
Yeah, it's wild.
And it's there's this almost sort of mathematical mind that's behind all of that. And in the stuff that we've published in this issue, the story of Jordan W. Lint, that the whole strategy is each year of his life is represented by a single day out of that year. And so each page you get, you know, his progression. And the other genius of it is that it's not an especially momentous day that he chooses. It's just a day that is kind of revealing in its sort of mundane details, but you also see how he's progressed from where he was just a few pages before. And the idea of telling a whole life sort of one page per year, again, I think, you know, that's something that you would expect out of a novelist, just a pure novelist.
Yeah.
And the fact that
a cartoonist.
And when he's this incredibly gifted artist on top of that, I think it's magnificent work.
Yeah. And that alone, really, for folks who are listening, that alone, this sneak peek at the work of Chris Ware, that alone is worth picking up this issue of the Virginia Quarterly Review. But that, again, is far from the only thing that's in there.
Right. Well, sort of the joke of Chris's little block on the cover about war and the end of the world is that there is actually a fair amount of that inside the issue. The attempt with the cover was to kind of soften the blow of some of what's inside. The issue begins, in fact, with four pieces, two each on Iraq and Afghanistan, and looking at the way in which things have seemed to have improved pretty significantly in the last year or so in Ramadi, a piece by Neil Shea, who's a staff writer at National Geographic, who writes about his time in Ramadi, and a great piece by Dave Morris, who has been on this show.
Of course, yeah.
Talking about, he had written a piece for us a year ago called The Big Suck that was about his time in Ramadi. We asked him to go back and see if things had in fact changed as much as people were saying. And I think it's a remarkable piece about how much things are improved on the streets for the people who live there, but the sort of strange paranoia that is gripping the Marines who are there, who can't seem to get past the idea that after years of seeing the city only as this battlefield and someplace where everything is a possible threat, that they can't seem to let go of that mindset. And that seems to be something of a powder keg also, and just hoping that that sort of delicate peace that seems to have come to Ramadi can be maintained.
And I just want to point out, the VQR, the Virginia Quarterly Review, has become one of really the only media outlets out there where you can read these kind of long-form, first-person narratives about what life is like in some of these places in the world, like Afghanistan and Iraq, right now.
And it's no mistake. I mean, one of the things that I wanted to do from the time that I started with the journal was to figure out a way to make a quarterly journal timely, and yet make that work stand up to the fact that it's going to have a shelf life of at least 3 months, and ideally it lasts beyond that. One of the ways that we've figured out to do that is to have these pieces that are longer, that are more retrospective, that the emphasis is much more on what it's like to be there and what the experience of being there is than just the daily reporting of events.
Yeah. We're talking with Ted Genoways. He's the editor at the Virginia Quarterly Review, and the winter issue is out now, winter 2008, and yet another amazing edition that will keep you transfixed and entertained for months. Who is Nicholas Schmidl? Is that, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, that's correct.
It sounds like a Faulkner character.
Yeah,
it?
Well.
And then the town clerk, Nicholas Schmidl, walked up. And
he's more like Lawrence of Arabia, if you ask me. Nicholas Schmidl is he's a freelance reporter who came to us I guess a little over a year ago. He was stationed in Islamabad and was proposing to do some writing for us about Pakistan. And it was a fortunate timing for us. We thought that it was an important region, and it certainly has turned out to be. He wrote in this issue a piece about Afghanistan, but he's written previously about the Balochistan region in Pakistan, and then wrote a piece for our website that was about what was going on in Afghanistan right after the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. Nicholas was deported from Pakistan for the reporting that he did for us and for the New York Times Magazine and Slate. The piece that was specifically cited in his deportation was actually one of the pieces that we published. The Balochistan region is off limits to reporters, but he had gone and written this long piece. And
Balochistan is where again?
It's on the sort of the southern region of Pakistan. It's a breakaway region that wants to become its own country, separate from Pakistan, And part of what Nicholas was writing about was what the Pakistani government is doing to try to make sure that Balochistan is not able to break away. And
there's some pretty severe efforts quelling dissent and
probably the strangest of the efforts, the thing that just seems absolutely surreal, is that they have built this major city that just doesn't have anybody in it yet, but it's a city that is set up I think it's around 2 million people to be able to move into it. And they've built the highways, the high rises, everything. They just haven't brought the people in yet. But the idea is that if they can bring people in from other regions of Pakistan who will vote for staying in with Pakistan, that will outweigh the
number of
people.
Marginalize the dissent that exists now.
Exactly.
That is a majority. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
So it's an extremely extreme measure and a very strange, almost, as I say, sort of surreal scene to see this entire city under construction. And Nicholas, I mean, did some amazing reporting at, to my mind, some considerable risk. And, you know, at this point, we're glad that he's safe and sound back in the U.S. And going to be now working on his book about his time in Pakistan.
I thought he had some very interesting observations about Benazir Bhutto and that, that whole group and how corrupt that they are, and that most Americans don't realize. Yet she was assassinated,
right?
And that's a tragedy, of course. But she and her father, and incredibly corrupt and pretty authoritarian. That
exactly,
that group.
Yeah. Well, and it's, as Nicholas points out in that piece, you know, that there's so much talk that's been out there about, you know, this delicate balance to maintain democracy in Pakistan, but in the whole 60-year history of the country, there's only been one peaceful transition of power. So to call that democracy it seems an exaggeration to me. I mean,
lipstick on a pig might be another way to put it.
to say that a whole series of military coups and you know, overthrows are the democratic process doesn't quite cut it, as far as I'm concerned.
To call that a free country and a democracy as long as that military is working for us.
Right.
Yeah. Ted Genovese is the editor at the Virginia Quarterly Review. The winter issue is out, and you can see some of that online at vqronline.org. Ted, tell us about some of the drawings in here, not the Chris Ware cartoons, but some of these drawings from Abu Ghraib. What are those? They're incredibly... when you just come across them and you're looking through the pages, you come across these drawings, and it's pretty startling.
Yeah, we've got two different artists, both responding to Abu Ghraib in very different ways. The painter, Fernando Botero, has gotten, I think, more attention of the two, certainly, for his paintings that are basically based on the testimony and some of the photographs from Abu Ghraib. But the ones that I think are even more intriguing are these watercolor drawings that were done by Daniel Heyman. And Daniel, through sort of coincidence, was able to get on with a group that was doing interviews with people who had been prisoners at Abu Ghraib. And what he originally planned to do was to go and paint these people as they were, their testimony was being given and recorded. And what he started doing then was actually working their words, working their testimony into their portraits, so that the words sort of swirl around their heads and become part of their bodies, and that their testimony, what happened to them, is now very much a part of who they are and how they're depicted.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, this one guy in this chair with part of an arm and a missing leg, and then all around him, almost like gnats in the air, are his own words telling about this horrific experience that he had.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just incredibly striking work, and it's work, too, that I think is all the more vital and I think affecting because of the fact that this is not something done from a remote stance of having seen news reports or having you know, reacted to what was in the press, but Daniel actually sitting in the room with these people and hearing what they went through and reacting to these things very much on the fly. And so these drawings seem very improvisational and very rough, but they also seem so direct that I think that they're hard to look away from. We got an email that meant a lot to me from one of our readers saying, you know, that these things were like a gut punch. And I thought, you know, that's exactly what they are. There's something that they seem so simple, but they're so direct and they're so honest that you can't help but be affected by them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think most Americans sort of look the other way when it comes to this stuff, and we can't afford to. You know, when we have to know, as members of a supposedly free society, you've got to know what soldiers are doing in your name. You have to.
And I think it's
and what people are ordering those soldiers to do in your name.
And to me, as I say, to me, the fact that these things focus on the individual experience and that it's not taking a political stance exactly as much as it is saying, here's what these people went through, here's what they experienced, and you can draw your own conclusions from that, and I think they're pretty inescapable. But there's no politicizing going on. It's just the reality of what happened.
Ted Genovese, the editor at the Virginia Quarterly Review, the magnificent winter issue is now available. And where can folks get it? Just the bookstores around
there,
right?
Yeah, any of the local bookstores. You can also you can order it over our website, and you can order it or you can walk into our offices at 1 West Range at the university also, and we'd be glad to sell you a copy there.
There you go. Thank you, Ted, so much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.